Hey there, and welcome back to the show. I hope your week has been going well, and I am super psyched for today's episode. I have my good friend Michelle Corey on here. I'll introduce her in just a minute, but we're really talking today about autoimmune disease, and I know that many of you have listened to my live lecture on autoimmune disease. It's, in fact, one of the more popular podcasts, so I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes, but today's discussion is a little bit different with regards to autoimmune disease. So if you want to get into the sort of nuts and bolts, I encourage you to go back and listen to the previous podcast as well. But today we talk a little bit more about things like mindset, the psychological, emotional factors behind autoimmune disease. We get into things like chakras and more of the energetics behind autoimmune disease, which I really feel is a missing component. You know, for a lot of you out there who are perhaps suffering from autoimmune disease, you know, you're doing the diet, you're taking the supplements, you're working out, you're doing all of the quote-unquote right things, but you're still not getting the results that you want. And I would strongly encourage you to listen to today's episode, because we talk a lot about trauma, we talk a lot about that sort of stuff. And to just sort of move along here, we do also get into the sort of differences between how modern medicine views and treats autoimmune disease, why there are severe shortcomings in the type of testing that they do, and how functional medicine is really the way forward when it comes to autoimmune disease. So we do talk a little bit about sort of cutting-edge lab tests and why your lab results from your doctor is coming back normal, but you're still showing all the signs and symptoms of autoimmune disease. And simply put, it's because we're looking in the wrong place. So we definitely spend a good chunk of time there today on today's show. So Michelle, I'll just give you an intro here. Michelle fully healed herself from two autoimmune diseases. She has lived it. She has survived it. She is, you know, fully healed, total recovery. And she has helped hundreds of patients in her clinic to also totally recover from autoimmune disease. She has an extremely busy practice down in New Mexico with a very long waiting list, I might add. And she's also the author of what I would consider to be one of the best books on autoimmune disease that I've read, and I strongly encourage you to read it. Again, check out the show notes for links to that. It's called The Thyroid Cure, and really it's not about Michelle's journey as much. It's obviously that's in there because that's who she is, but it's very well referenced. It is written to stand up to scrutiny, to stand up to rigor, because Michelle really wanted to prove from a scientific perspective that autoimmune disease is fully reversible and can be cured. And so I encourage you, if you are suffering from autoimmune disease, perhaps if you're a practitioner who is seeing a lot of autoimmune disease in your practice and you're not really sure about how to approach things, definitely pick up a copy of her book. And, you know, one thing I will say is autoimmune disease gets very, very complicated. But I think you will hear on today's show that Michelle strongly encourages you to sort of dial it down and keep it simple. And there's really so much that you can do to manage or reverse autoimmune disease that doesn't have to be overly complicated. So, yeah, I think I'll leave it at that for today. Definitely check out the show notes for her website, for her book, and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, enjoy the show. Thanks for listening. So hey, Michelle, welcome to Holistic Health Masterclass Podcast.
Hey, Brett, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, most welcome. And we've had such good discussions off air about all kinds of stuff. So it's great to actually sit down and share some of the stuff that we've been talking about with our listeners today. I'm just going to sort of throw things out there for you, you know, and give people a lightning fast background of yourself and your journey and how you really came to be an expert in the field of autoimmune disease.
Okay, great. Sounds good. Do you want me to tell the story right now?
Go for it. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, Well, okay. So it's all started with a diagnosis of Hashimoto's and lupus back in 2004. I was having a lot of strange symptoms actually for a lot of years leading up to that. For about 4 or 5 years, I was pretty miserable, mostly with Hashimoto's symptoms. I was married at the time in an unhappy marriage, unfortunately. And I was kind of like one of those people that just did everything for everyone else, you know, kind of like the martyr type, you know. And I had gone to see some conventional doctors for what was going on with me, but nobody, they prescribed Ativan, you know, and they said, oh, well, you know, it sounds like you have a lot of stress in your life. So, you know, obviously an anti-anxiety pill was the answer, right? So, but my husband at the time had gone to Papua New Guinea and he came back with this horrible gastrointestinal something. It was like nothing that anybody in our small little beach town of Santa Cruz could figure out. We went to the gastroenterologist and what nobody really knew. So I was always had my kind of like ear to integrative medicine. I was one of those people that always had health books, you know, by her bedstand and that kind of thing. My first job was in a health food store. So, just got me into this whole idea of like natural healing. And I scheduled an appointment for my husband to go see this doctor up in San Rafael. His name's Elson Haas. He's one of, you know, a famous integrative physician. I would have never thought of actually going for myself, right? But, you know, the $650 was something that we could pay for my husband to go see. So we drove up and we're sitting, you know, and the doc says, well, we'll go ahead and run some GI tests on it. Sounds like you probably have some parasites. You got something, picked up some weird bug while you were there. And he turns to me and he says, what's your problem? I think that I have chronic candida and I think I have a thyroid problem, but you know, all my doctors just think I'm crazy. And he said, well, we'll run some tests on you too. And we'll check your thyroid and we'll check for candida. And sure enough, you know, the test came back and I did have Hashimoto's and candida antibodies. And so he looked at me and he said, okay, you have Hashimoto's and you know, you have a chronic autoimmune thing going on. How do you think you got this? And I was like, you're the doctor, you know what I mean? Like, why are you asking me, right? And I felt really like a victim. I was so angry, you know, I got angry about it. I was like, well, I'm paying you all this money per hour, you know, to ask me a question like that. But it really resonated, you know, and over a few weeks, I was like, wait a minute, you know, how did I get this? You know, when I took an assessment of my entire life and I realized, wow, everything is inflammatory. I was in an inflammatory marriage. I was running a small advertising agency, which was really challenging for me. I was very stressed out, working 7 days a week, drinking a lot of coffee, drinking a lot of wine at night, you know, taking Ativan. I was kind of like in this cycle, you know, of inflammation. But I realized that, like, you know, how I got that was due to of how I was dealing with my life and not dealing with certain aspects of my life in the past. I was a survivor of severe childhood abuse and trauma. And I wasn't really looking at that. I was just running away from everything all the time. I was kind of like in denial, you know, didn't really, I'd gone through therapy and stuff like that, but I was kind of like, I hadn't really dealt with a lot of those issues. And, so ultimately, it just created a super inflammatory condition in my body. And, you know, I decided to change my entire life. I sold my business. I got a divorce. I moved from Santa Cruz to the mountains of New Mexico. And my whole mission was to unravel, you know, how I had got this. And even Dr. Haas at the time, he said, I don't know what his beliefs are now, but he said, I said, is there a cure for Hashimoto's? He said, no, that's it. You know, you have it.
And even coming from him, right? I mean, you know.
And even coming from him, I thought, whoa, you know. But it's something inside of me was like, wait a second. You know, this doesn't make sense to me that an autoimmune condition is incurable. That doesn't make any sense, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, you touch on a couple of things where I think the first one is the journey, right? And I think a lot of people don't really appreciate that journey. You know, I often say to my clients in my practice, I always say to them, you know, where are you right now on the river of health? You know, like, are you about to fall over the waterfall, or are you right at the top in perfectly good health? And they sort of, you know, I've got the whole chart, right? And of course, if they're super sick, they're pretty close to falling over the waterfall. And it's like, how long did it take you to get there?
Right.
And they go, well, it took me my whole life. It's like, okay. So what do you think happened in order for you to get to that point? And what do you think is going to have to happen to get back up the river into a better stage of health? And, you know, I found that when I ask people that, most people have never even really thought about it, because we're still under this weird illusion, if you will, that things just come out of the blue. You know, wake up one day and bam, oh, how did this happen? How did I get this? Oh my gosh, you know, this is, but if you actually trace it back, as you just said, you realize that everything that you've been doing in your life has essentially led you to that moment, right? And I want to ask you, were you in medicine at that point? Like, were you practicing anything, or were you studying, or were you just sort of like an avid health nut when you got your diagnosis?
No, I had been a dental hygienist, and I moved then into dental consulting and advertising for doctors and plastic surgeons. So I had been around sort of the medical dental field since 1989. But again, like my first, I was kind of just one of those health nuts. Like I got a job at a health food store when I was 15 years old. And that was like it just resonated with me that everything, not necessarily taking a bunch of vitamins or all of that, but it was just like this whole idea that that health could be restored through natural means just always made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, which makes sense. So, you know, I guess circling back a little bit, you know, so you figure out what's going on. You basically get told that there's no cure, and you decide to say, you know, screw that. I can do this. I'm going for it. And you change your life around now. I will come back, I think, at some point. I think it would be good for us to talk about those really big changes, because I do want to spend a good amount of time there. And we have done another podcast, which is actually a live recording of a presentation I did on the root causes of autoimmune disease. But perhaps you can share with us, you know, you obviously see people right now. You have a practice. You've seen hundreds and hundreds of people. You've written a very, very thorough and successful book called The Thyroid Cure. What sort of areas, I know you the five sort of splinters, the five areas that you sort of see across the board with everyone with autoimmune disease, perhaps we can sort of dive into that a little bit.
Yeah. So in my book, I call them the splinters, right? So, and you know, I look at triggers as splinters that can be removed, right? And typically across the board, there is always chronic stress. It's always some sort of a chronic stress situation. Remember, the body doesn't really understand the difference between infectious stress or, you know, or a fight with your spouse or, you know, there's just, but it just creates a lot of inflammation.
So this could be internal stress as well as external stress, lifestyle factors, stuff like that.
Precisely. It's just a stress, you know, HPA axis dysfunction is the new you know, we used to call it adrenal fatigue or adrenal dysfunction, but it's really how the brain talks to the endocrine system that is, as you know, thrown out a lot. And like most people who, you know, you don't catch an autoimmune disease, right? I mean, that doesn't happen. you walk down the street and you, oh, I got lupus. You know, it doesn't happen that way. It's years and years and years of chronic emotional stress. A lot of people who come to me have dealt with trauma. And by the way, everyone's traumatized. So even if you haven't had, you know, a specific type of child abuse or something like that, everyone has experienced some type of trauma if you're human, right? So it's just this chronic stress response that then turns into GI disturbances and eventually some sort of like infectious stress. And usually there's environmental factors, you know, lowered immunity, but ultimately, that chronic stress is what makes you vulnerable, right, to environmental things. So it's not necessarily your genetics, right? It's just, you're constantly running in overdrive, and you're in burnout mode. Your immune system is shot, and that's how cancer and autoimmune disease wind up happening.
So do you feel like there's, you know, I sort of call it this perfect storm situation. Do you feel, so the stress is bubbling in the background, and oftentimes people will have a stressful episode, right? I've heard this a lot in my practice. So the straw that broke the camel's back. But in your experience, do you find that there's always an underlying infection or there's other stuff going on in conjunction with that sort of straw that breaks the camel's back?
Yeah, absolutely. So the chronic stress state, it leaves us open to all sorts of problems. And most people have, you know, infectious things going on in the gut, disrupted microbiome. There could be virus there. There's a lot, you know, the herpes virus, Epstein-Barr virus. These are big troublemakers and major splinters for autoimmune disease. But think about it. I mean, you know, 90% of the world's population has been exposed to Epstein-Barr and herpes. It only causes a problem. These viruses only cause a problem. They're opportunistic. So when our, you know, immune system is lowered, and because we're in a chronic stress state, that's when we can have a chance of reactivation of viruses.
And particularly, I would like to get your input on this one. You know, particularly what I've heard and what I've found is these viruses are very difficult to actually wipe out. Right, that we do have antivirals and stuff, but typically the way that medicine treats it, you know, like let's say we have we get mono, for example, and the amount of people that tell me that they had mono, I hear it all the time, and whenever I hear that, I'm like Epstein-Barr virus, which is probably stuck in your body now, right? And does it lay dormant and then get activated when we have these stressful episodes? Is that
absolutely
that,
Absolutely. And I do a lot of viral testing on people. So, you know, there's a full viral panel, which will tell you how high the antibodies are. You know, is it a current infection, a past infection, and how much is the immune system involved then in fighting off the virus?
And so this is functional lab testing, right?
Yeah, you can go to, this is regular conventional testing. I mean, you can you can get here in the United States anyway, an Epstein-Barr panel. And, you know, doctors are always really shocked when their patients ask for the EBV panel. And then we see these elevated antibodies and IgM, which is, shows a reactivation. They're like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is actually happening. But, you know, what I found is that many times, you know, in the beginning, when I'm first getting to know someone, I'll ask them, did you ever have a period of like 2 weeks or a month where you were just wiped out by something, you know, or you had mono? And typically it's very common that someone will say in high school or in college during a particular stressful time, they got mono and they never felt quite the same after that. And that's a trick in my mind to know, let's test for this, because that could be a major splinter for that particular individual.
And so I think that most people listening, you know, we have a fairly well-educated audience listening. I think we're all comfortable with dealing with things like SIBO, dealing with yeast and whatnot. But I don't think many people are comfortable dealing with viral infections. You know, so what's the approach to kind of tackle that? You know?
Yeah. So the best approach is really to strengthen the immune system, and this is not by immune system modulators, right? So if you have somebody obviously who's in an autoimmune flare-up, you don't want to start throwing a lot of immunoglobulins at them or, you know, something like that. But it's really about just kind of like you probably would approach any type of healing. We would look at the source of the chronic stress and really get into, okay, how realistic is it for you to slow down, get some rest, and rebuild, right? So in Ayurveda, they call it like low agni, low fire. Like an individual who has, you know, a reactivation of a virus is going to have HP axis dysfunction. They're going to be really, you know, usually that's just the chronic fatigue type of person, right? So how do you get them back? And, you know, how do you fight the virus? It's not necessarily with killing the virus with a particular substance, because the person doesn't have enough fire for that anyway, right? So I would typically just start to address the stress points and how can we heal the HP axis? How can we heal the adrenals? And how can we remove whatever is really causing that major stressor? And many times, I mean, then this is tricky, right? I think I heard this for you on your wonderful podcast that you did on mind, body, spirit medicine, was that sometimes this is a big situation, like a bad marriage or a job situation that isn't working, or perhaps a person is caregivers of their parents, you know, and they're working too, you know, and there's a lot. So it can seem like really insurmountable for a lot of people. They just feel like, oh my God, I have so much stress and I literally am trapped. I cannot get out of it. So it's about finding those ways to help people get unstuck and new strategies for, you know, and it's never, you know, that's the thing. It's not overnight. You know, these things don't change overnight, but well, there are things like lorcytin, you know, monolauric acid that you can help fight the virus and bring it down. Obviously improving methylation, healing the gut, all of the functional stuff is still important. But, you know, getting on something like Valtrex is not a good solution. Oh.
So one other thing that I've certainly been looking into, and whenever I say it, people tend to be quite shocked, is this whole idea of what's called molecular mimicry, right? And I think that molecular mimicry is very, very pertinent to Hashimoto's and Epstein-Barr, right? So perhaps you can sort of dive into that a little bit for us.
Yeah, well, it's a mechanism by which, you know, one of the theories on how they think the thyroid or other glands can be attacked is usually the immune system is that certain proteins that, you know, the Epstein-Barr virus have look very similar to the thyroid gland or the adrenal glands. Many times, you know, like in the case of Addison's, that is an Epstein-Barr situation. Mm-hmm. So the immune system is not necessarily attacking the thyroid gland or the adrenal glands purposely. It's just making a mistake. It's like, oh, that looks very much like the virus. But more that we're learning, though, with Epstein-Barr is that they're finding it when they do... and they take a little piece of the thyroid out.
Yeah.
And they're finding the virus inside of the thyroid gland.
And that's something that I've been researching more these days is the virus actually sort of lodging itself in the tissue. And then you've got this battle between the immune system and trying to attack the virus. But it's almost like the battlefield, which is the thyroid gland, is getting destroyed in the process, right?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what's happening. And a lot of times with calcifications and nodules, what you have is in the middle of that calcification, there's an infection. And that could be any type of infection, but there's some sort of that's the body is trying to sequester this infection off and creating more calcium around it. Not necessarily a biofilm that the bug is creating, but the body.
So of course, then at that point, the immune system, it's very difficult for it to get in and really take care of it, right?
Precisely. And so there's just the constant inflammation going on. And you can see it in a thyroid scan, in Graves' disease or Hashimoto's, when there is a virus or a infection present, this is a very vascular thyroid. You see a lot of, that will come back on the CT scan as it's very vascular. And that's typically represents some sort of infection going on.
Yeah. So I guess we'll move it forward. I mean, leaky gut is like a no-brainer. I mean, everyone with autoimmune disease has leaky gut. Is that like pretty fair to say, or most?
I would say between 70% and 80% have some sort of a leaky gut. It doesn't necessarily, there's a good 20% to 30% of individuals with full blown autoimmune that don't have much going on in the gut, which is
interesting.
It's remarkable, really. And it's kind of one of those things where as a functional medical or integrative physician, you're like, oh my God, you know, there's nothing happening here. What's really going on in those cases, it could be, more of a toxic exposure and some other type of chronic inflammation, but the gut in and of itself isn't really having that many problems. And that it can be a little more complicated.
Yeah.
So see that with like vitiligo, for example. So individuals who have been exposed to, let's say, atrazine, which is a type of pesticide, and this triggers this, you know, this, it's very complicated. It gets into like, you know, again, with like how the pituitary and is it, you know, communicating with the melanocyte. It's just really a fascinating process. But that is, I'm finding more and more that vitiligo isn't even really autoimmune, right? But then you look at the gut and nothing's going on in the gut, right? So the traditional approach to healing them and, you know, the five R's or whatever they are, that's not necessarily going to be the approach for that particular person. So you have to look, you have to dig deeper, you know.
Yeah.
Which in the gut, you have to keep looking.
Yeah. Well, which is interesting because I've definitely had a few people like that where, you know, you want to jump on the leaky gut and then it's like, ooh, okay, hang on. You don't actually have leaky gut. It's like, now what? Like, dang it, you know, now I've got to really, really think and sort of go deep. But you know, what's also interesting with those folks, I totally hear you on the sort of toxic exposure. I mean, I know that's something I've heard you speak about quite a bit in some of your lectures, things like GMOs and the chemicals that go along with GMOs, your glyphosates, your Roundups, you know, that sort of stuff obviously pose a huge problem in terms of immune system burden.
Total body burden, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that we're starting to discover now with glyphosate is that glyphosate actually triggers leaky gut. So you can imagine zonulin protein. Sorry to get a little sciencey here, folks, just for one second, indulge me. So glyphosate levels are, the intake is up, and that stimulates the release of zonulin. The higher zonulin goes, the leakier the gut goes, right? And it just stays like that. Yeah. And so I think that it's absolutely vital, and I've heard you say this a million times, that people have to go organic if they have autoimmune disease, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And they have to look at their environment, that what's, you know, what are they sleeping on? What's off-gassing in their home? You know, that new car smell, that might be killing you, you know? You have to look at the products you have in your, you know, a lot of people aren't aware. They really don't understand that doing a, you know, one of those raid bombs in the middle of the house, you know, to kill the bugs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
It's not cluing in for them that, you know, that this is a major immune disruptor. So that's also a different mechanism. And, you know, glycine, too. I mean, I went to one of those toxic, the whole thing on toxicology down in San Diego a couple of years ago. Glyphosate was the topic. And what they were bringing out, too, is not only does it, you know, mess up the gut and cause a leaky gut and immune disruption there, but it also replaces glycine in the body.
Yeah, right, so right.
Think about that and think about the effects on the frontal lobe. And think about the effects of methylation and detoxification. So literally just going out and spraying that Roundup in your, if you live on a golf course, forget it. You know, there's a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people don't really know where they're being exposed to this. Maybe they say, oh, I don't spray Roundup, but, you know, if their neighbor is doing
it's
it.
Everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's very, very much, very disruptive to the immune system.
Yeah. I mean, and just to close on that point, I mean, that's something that I've dived into pretty deep with the detox project. You know, we're constantly working on that. And some of the data that they've shown me is just like absolutely astounding where, and even running glyphosate tests on people that have eaten organic for 5 years, you still come up with, you know, 60th percentile on the test, you know, which is kind of crazy. And of course they're shocked. They're like, how is this, you know, but pervasive in the environment is huge. So I wanted to sort of ask you a question since we're talking about all of the stuff. Do you find that when you first like start working with people, are people just completely overwhelmed and like, do they feel a little bit paralyzed as to all the stuff that they have to do here for autoimmune disease?
Well, they are, most of the time, I'll be honest with you, the people who come to me have seen all of the big names. They've gone to so-and-so that wrote this book or that book or what have you. And yeah, they're very confused. They usually have about, you know, 5-inch, you know, stack of tests that they've had and all sorts of, you know, things that other people have prescribed. And they're really worn out and really frustrated with it all. I help streamline the process. So it's autoimmune doesn't have to be that complicated. There are a lot of factors, a lot of moving parts, but honestly, you know, you slow it way back down. And like you said, go upstream to a time when they were well, create a timeline, find those triggers, look, you know, utilize real functional testing when it's necessary, not just because, oh, I think we should run this test just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but it's very specific. It's very specific to the individual. So there isn't a quote unquote autoimmune functional protocol necessarily. It's so individual. So then I think that, you know, I love this. Dr. Alexander Haskell, who I interview in my book, he makes the correlation between feeling very overwhelmed and confused and what the immune system is doing, right?
Interesting. So,
a confused and overworked immune system. And then, you know, the individual showing up very scattered, overwhelmed, and also confused. So it's really about helping the person find clarity, stillness. And that's not easy all the time, right? But it's like, okay, we're going to get rid of everything that isn't necessary here. And let's just focus on, you know.
Yeah. I think, you know, you really hit the nail on the head there a couple of times for me, because you know, when you're dealing, and for those of you listening out there who have some type of autoimmune disease, you know, really pay attention to what we're talking about here and what Michelle is saying, because I've seen this hundreds of times over, and I'm sure you have as well. When people get that diagnosis, they go straight into freak out mode and they're like, I don't know what to do. I'm so overwhelmed. This is a death sentence. And, you know, we're both part of these groups online, where these support groups and whatnot, and I see it all the time. And, you know, I just really want to strongly say this again to you guys listening out there. If this is you, just know that there's a simple way to approach this, and it doesn't have to be overly complicated. If you start paying attention to some of the things that we've been covering in this episode, and I will backlink to the previous episode on autoimmune as well, if you actually just start doing some of that stuff and cleaning things up and taking it bit by bit, you will start to notice improvements. It might not be a radical reversal in a month, but you're going to start seeing some improvements, and really it's about changing the way that you live your life. And that's really what I think Michelle is really getting at here. But the other thing that I think is really important that I want to pull out here is the fact that we're dealing with personalized medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, we are living in that age where we have access to this. It's totally possible to have personalized medicine. And this whole cookie cutter approach that we've been taking, and that is still being pushed on us, dare I say, by mainstream medicine, that is not the only way to approach this. If you, and I think this is something I want to actually turn over to you. People start feeling terrible, they start reading, and then they go and get lab work done by their doctor, and everything comes back as normal, right?
Right.
Right. I'll let you take it over from there, right? Because, you know, ties in with what we're talking about. Because this happens as well, folks, and I know that many of you, you've experienced this. You go and get lab work done, it comes back as normal, you're told that you're fine.
Yeah, and that is very common, especially when we think of like the standard of care, at least in the U.S., is that, you know, the first person you're going to see is your OBGYN or your primary care. And, you know, within their scope of practice, they're going to run, you know, some very common tests, you know, they're sort of across the board for everybody. And they're not always going to be picking up, they almost never test for inflammatory markers. You know, doctors are not looking for C-reactive protein, SED rate, ANA, and to their defense, it's really, in some cases, out of the scope of their practice, and it's not something that, but, you know, they will say, oh, well, you look fine to me, you know? And there is something that I have observed over the years. In particular, when somebody has had a lifelong relationship with a physician, there is a lot of, and the doctor really loves the person, right? And they really mm-hmm. care about the person. They sort of don't want that person to be sick, you know? It's kind of like, especially not under my watch, you know, I don't want that to happen. So there's sort of a denial thing that can happen. And what I found is that people who come to see me, they've been to at least 8 people before they come to me.
Wow.
And And maybe they have suffered anywhere between 8 and 4 years with chronic debilitating symptoms before they finally got a diagnosis, right? Before finally somebody sent them to a rheumatologist who then ran the inflammatory markers, because it just isn't part of the standard of care, at least here in the United States, to check for inflammation. They just don't do that, you know? I mean,
do you also think that this has to do in part with our sort of compartmentalization of medicine? Where, you know, the gastroenterologist doesn't know anything about endocrinology, who doesn't know anything about rheumatology, and so on and so on. And so we're just getting bounced around from all these specialists who don't really know what each other are doing. Like, I mean,
it's very Newtonian and mechanistic. It's kind of like, you know, putting the pieces of a clock together, and that's just not how humans work, you know. And, I will say that there are some very savvy integrative physicians here in the United States who know right off there, and they no longer work under the dictates of the insurance company. They have ties, and they know how, you know, they have a more holistic approach where they are running these tests right off the bat. And if you have somebody like that, you're lucky, because you know, if you're going through your insurance and you're just going to a regular primary care that shows up in a Blue Cross book, you know, come on, it's hit or miss whether you're going to get somebody who really
Well, I think that this is where the modernization of naturopathy and functional medicine is really sort of blazing trails, right? Where, you know, it still is a little bit mechanistic in a way, but at the same time, we are looking at things through a much broader lens than simply focusing on, you know, CBC and blood chemistry and whatever else. You know, we are looking for, you know, antibodies, autoantibodies, food allergy testing, blah, blah, blah. So it's exciting. I mean, it's exciting. And the reason why I say it's exciting is not just because it's exciting that we have all of that cool stuff available to us. It's also exciting because there's so many people suffering with autoimmune disease.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, the discoveries, the discoveries and the research that we've made in the last 5 years even has just shed so much light on how deep and complex autoimmune disease really is. So, so I want to circle all the way back and let's talk about, you know, I think the last sort of splinter, using your lingo, is really the emotional side of things. Right. And do you find that with your patients that you work with, I mean, is there always like this underlying emotional psychological issue, like, or issues that are going on?
I would say 99.9% of the time. Yeah.
Okay. So almost 100.
Almost 100%. Yeah. I mean, occasionally, and I say that because, for example, I have a little kid who, and not to say he doesn't have trauma, and there is stuff, isn't something going on generally, you know, back in his generations, right? There's likely something, but they were living on a military base and they had a chemical spill. And this, so you have those acute exposures and that type of thing that can trigger an immune response. In his case, it was alopecia and a couple of other things. And, you know, poor kid, he was just, you know, minding his own business. Everybody was, but the way that his genetics worked with that particular type of chemical was not, it caused a lot of problems. So that can happen. Sometimes you could just have somebody that just, you know, they've had a bad exposure. You know, I've had people who are farmers, right, who have had a lot of exposure to chemicals and things like that. So there's that. But I would say most of the time people are coming in with really what I consider a broken heart. You know, it really comes down to, and what's interesting about that is when you think about like the heart chakra, right? You know, and this is getting out into a different type of philosophy. And I don't know how many of your listeners are into.
Go for it. I'm right there with you. It's great.
Yeah, right. So I remember hearing Dr. Amit Goswami. He's a, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a quantum physicist who taught at the University of Portland. And he did a movie. And anyway, he, in one of the scenes, documentary, he says, what is this about the heart chakra? What is this about the heart chakra? What we're really talking about with the heart chakra is the thymus gland. And it just hit me like a beam. I was like, oh my God, that's absolutely what it is. And he said, when you tell somebody essentially that you love them, you are essentially saying my immune system accepts you.
Okay. Interesting.
So when you think about how, and I always tell my patients, look, if your heart's not in it, neither is your immune system. So let's look at the areas of your life where you are not in alignment with what your heart is really telling you. Because so many times people will override. We're the only creature that second guesses our intuition, right?
You know? Totally. Well, I mean, I think we've been conditioned to that nowadays, right? I mean, it's almost like, yeah, we've got to shut it down.
Precisely. But when you think about, and now, you know, Duke University in 2000 did a great study on the thymus gland and how it actually does not atrophy. And I know most people who are listening here might be a doctor, might, you know, the studies, they used to think that, you know, by the time we were 20 or 30, you know, the thymus gland was almost totally gone. But what they found was that they only thought that way because they were looking at individuals, cadavers of people who had died of chronic illness. But when they looked at cadavers of individuals who had died, let's say in a fiery crash, but they were young and healthy,
right,
the plan was not atrophied. It actually had expanded to them to be able to facilitate the production of T cells during this traumatic experience. So we know that from what they're doing, and of course this has a lot, this is like turn the whole, everything up on there on its end with the fact that, oh no, maybe the thymus gland really does stay around. But the way I like to think of it, it's like it's the thymus gland is really the university of the heart. It's educating T cells. And I don't know if people realize this, but 96% of T cells that go through the thymus gland are destroyed. So that's only 4%, 4%. And they're destroyed because they may have the potential of self-harm. right? So if you have, so let's just back it all up, right? Let's just say you have a broken heart, or your heart chakra is turned down, you have an atrophied, thymus gland that isn't working very well. Maybe there are some T cells that are going to get through there that do have the potential to be self-harming, right? So, and this is a whole, this is, I mean, it's just reasonable, right, to look at it from that perspective. And there are interesting studies, like the Duke University study, which kind of brings some enlightenment around that. But again, you know, we have the sciencey part of it, right? But then it's really looking at we have the power to heal the heart and to heal the thymus gland all on our own, you know, just by paying attention to, you know, those deeper issues in our life.
And that's what a lot of the emotional freedom technique and the tapping, you know, the tapping to activate the thymus gland and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, you kind of sort of jogged my memory, or at least sort of made me think about something different. And when I think of autoimmune, I mean, could we sort of label that as non-recognition of self?
Yeah,
in a way, right? I mean, not in a physical way, but I more mean like in an emotional way, like perhaps we're not honoring ourselves.
Yes,
perhaps we're disconnected from our higher self, like that sort of line of thinking.
Yeah, and it's important to look at that with everybody. Anybody who has an autoimmune diagnosis, it's very important to look at where you have abandoned yourself and where you're not connected in to what I consider source energy. Or if you have a belief in God, it's that, you know, that Christ consciousness, whatever it is that we are all connected, and you know, that we have really the ability to heal ourselves if we can collect all of the parts of ourselves that we've abandoned.
Well, and I think, like, you know, well, maybe a question more than a statement. Do you think that healing these deeper parts of ourselves and this emotion, the emotional psychological stuff, I mean, obviously it's very traumatic for a lot of people in many instances, but do you feel that someone could overcome or reverse their autoimmune disease without addressing those? Or do you feel like you kind of have to really get your hands dirty and get a little messy, you know?
Well, the way I look at it is, here's the thing. I think that it's possible with now functional medicine and nutrition for an individual to get the physical body fairly strong and to have a disease process halt or perhaps even reverse. But ultimately, that program that was running that created the illness in the first place, if you don't deal with that, it's going to come back, right? So
exactly. You know. Yeah. And I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head there again, because you're still operating with the old software.
Right.
You're trying to put it into a new frame, right? And yeah. Ultimately, yeah, it will come back. But I think also what a lot of people are doing is simply managing the symptoms of autoimmune disease without fully resolving. And I know, you know, let's jump right in. That's actually your next book that's coming out, right? Is Total Recovery. And so I want you to chat about that a little bit, because I think that a lot of people are still under the assumption that you can simply manage these symptoms with natural medicine, and that's about as good as it's going to get, right?
Right. Yeah. And I would say that, you know, you could probably do a pretty good job of managing the symptoms. And I think that still we have the, you know, the mindset in functional integrative medicine is not that autoimmune disease can be cured. There's very few of us that actually know it to be true, because we've lived it in our, you know, we've experienced it in our own bodies and witnessed it with our own patients. But for the most part, it's still the mindset is, from the conventional side, there is no cure. And even, you know, in the integrative functional, well, we can't, you know, we can't cure you, but we can get you kind of better, you know. And that's very misleading, really, because there, you know, to be honest with you, there isn't a single scientific study that proves autoimmune disease can't be totally reversed. There isn't a single one that proves it. In fact, there's thousands of scholarly articles and papers that are written on all of the triggers for it, right? So,
right.
I mean, come on. The very process of autoimmunity should tell us that it's reversible, right? And the science is all there. I mean, it's in the first book. I mean, the next book's not going to be as sciencey and footnoted, because I don't want to belabor the point. You know, I mean, the issue is that you can totally recover. And what I want to bring forward is that we have to ask new questions, right? We're approaching it from a very mechanistic standpoint, still even in functional medicine, do, you know, methylation and vitamins and, you know, the gut and all of that, that's all fine. But really going back around to like what you were talking about in your mind, body, soul podcast is that, that there's a whole aspect of our health and wellness that, that really isn't being talked about. Right. And, I was just mentioning this to a colleague of mine the other day. I mean, what was that Harvard study where they studied all of the centurions who had lived long and happy lives, right? We have to look at people who are doing it right, okay, and get some information from them to apply that to our life situations, right?
Well, and this is something that you and I have discussed off air is this whole idea of focusing on everything that's wrong, right? So, we'd like to study the heck out of triggers and negative impacts and all this sort of stuff. But as soon as when it, you know, comes to studying things that are hugely beneficial, yes, it happens. Of course it happens, but maybe not to the degree where we're studying all the problems, right?
For most of our serious problems that we have on the planet now, from global warming to, you know, the rise in chronic illness, we have to start having a more, a different approach of where we're looking for what works, you know, observe in nature what actually works and model healing programs off of that.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I mean, just bringing it back into medicine, right? I mean, if you look at the current model out there, it's really, there's no resources or money being funneled onto prevention at all.
It's not profitable enough.
Well, exactly, right? We won't go there today. Anyway, you know where we stand on that. But, you know, you look at World Health Organization, for example, 95 give or take percent of cancer is environmental and lifestyle driven, of course we could lump dietary driven into that. We know from epigenetic medicine that, you know, you've got over 90% of disease is caused by epigenetic factors versus genetic factors, but all of the money is being funneled into genetic research from autism to cancer. Yeah. And in between. So just kind of like, you know, to your point, it's just kind of crazy that we're, and we will never be able to succeed with a system like that. It's impossible. I mean, again, World Health Organization has already said that we cannot treat our way out of cancer with the current model because we don't have the resources and the diagnostics keep going up. Like the rates keep going, not for all cancers, but you know what I mean? Like global population grows. Therefore, on a numbers level, numbers rise. Not percentages, but overall numbers. And then we're still dealing with the same amount of resources to try and treat it. It just doesn't make any sense, right? So, and I think that that's another point that I would like for you to speak to is the whole idea about patient outcomes, right? You know, setting intentions, patient outcomes, and really for that to be the primary working framework for both physicians and for their patients.
Yeah, that's my big point that I'm bringing out next is really this, again, physicians are trained to convey false pessimism, right? Don't get the person's hopes up, whatever you do, you know, because we are living in a litigious society and, you know, you don't want to get dinged for making any claims or anything like that. But again, it's totally arrogant to tell a patient that they can't heal themselves. You know, I mean, and we have, I mean, it's just, come on. I mean,
it's just like on a base level, you are literally just walking over and taking someone's power right out of them.
Right. Exactly. And there has to be a two-way street. They have to allow you to, model is set up now where a patient, okay, which is kind of like a little kid, advocates their responsibility to this, you know, all-knowing, omnipotent creature called the medical doctor. And, you know, it's a toxic relationship.
It's very unbalanced, right? And I think that, you know, you bring up another key point, and I know, again, we've discussed this, but for you guys listening out there, it's really important to know that you have control. You are an active and willing participant in your own healing journey. You know, as soon as you expect someone else to come and heal you, you give away your power. You essentially just say, I have no control over this. I cannot do anything about this. And if you think about it from an intention perspective, that's a very bad place to start because you're kind of limiting yourself right from the get-go. I mean, you're basically saying, and of course, if you're lucky enough to find the right doctor, quote unquote, who will heal you, quote unquote, maybe you'll be the lucky few. But as you've experienced probably a lot more than I have, you have to be the person that facilitates your own healing. Otherwise, it's most likely not going to happen.
You're the only one, that the individual is the only one that can. So there is nothing outside of you that can heal you, right? There isn't a drug.
Just someone to show you the way.
Precisely. They can, an individual can guide you, but they can't, quote unquote, heal you. And, I'm not saying that there are not great shaman and people. I've witnessed,
of course,
incredible things. But again, the healer is just a guide, right, to this power, source energy, which resides in all of us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to get in touch with that healing energy within yourself in order to heal.
Yeah. Well, I think on that note, let's wrap things up for time's sake. And I think a very well-rounded approach to autoimmune disease. Michelle, where can we find out more about what you're up to, your current work, any exciting projects or anything going on that you want to share with us?
Well, you know, the book is going, and you can just check out my website. It's just michellecorey.com, and I'll be updating that. You know, update that frequently with what I have happening right now. Right now I'm running total recovery programs for individuals with autoimmunity. You know, I have a waiting list, so, but it's still okay.
So don't sign up, everyone. Don't sign up. Don't rush out all at once. Get the book.
Yeah, exactly. The book, I'm hoping we're shooting for the spring of next year to have that ready. So
that's for the new book, right?
New book, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. And Michelle and I do have some exciting news, which we'll save for another day. Keep you folks in anticipation. So Michelle, wonderful to sit down with you and have a good chat. And I'm sure at some point we'll have you back on the podcast. For those folks listening out there, I hope you enjoyed another episode of Holistic Health Masterclass podcast. And if you do like this episode or any others, definitely consider sharing, giving us a review, subscribing, doing whatever it is you can to help us keep the show going. So Michelle, thank you so much, and you enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, awesome. Bye for now.
Bye.